Welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review. Our several-year mission will be to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We will be reviewing every Star Trek comic book ever published. These stories have been released by Gold Key, Marvel, DC, Malibu, Wildstorm, Tokyo Press, IDW, and others. Star Trek and all that the Star Trek universe contains is copyrighted by CBS Studios, Inc.
Hello and welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review with Donovan and Ken. Episode number 429, recorded August 11th, 2024.
And today we are doing Star Trek 2022 series, issue number 22, and then the Star Trek Defiant series, issue number 17.
Yes, yes. As we will find out the answer to the question. At least I don't think we found out for sure until now, but by the end of this episode, we will find out the question, the answer to the question, will these series come back together again? Did we find out last time? I don't think we did.
No.
Did we? Okay, no. We definitely find out in these books.
Do we?
For sure. Yes.
Hmm. All right, well, we'll talk about it then.
Yes. Okay. Excellent. That's what we're here for. We're here to talk about these issues and the continuing adventures. And okay. Well, anything going on in your world or the world of Star Trek that we should be mentioning?
Not much. I'm not quite finished through Prodigy yet. I know you finished it, but seeing the big guest star on the cover of Star Trek 22 made me feel like, oh man, I wonder if it's going to spoil anything from Prodigy, but I didn't feel like it spoiled anything. So, but definitely some of the same characters cross over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in general, having gotten to the end of the Prodigy season two, I enjoyed it quite a bit. Quite adventurous. Lots of guest stars popping in. And I enjoyed it. You know, I wouldn't call it perfection, but it was pretty doggone good.
Now, is it definitely not getting a season three, or?
Oh, who knows?
Are they still hoping for one?
You never know. I mean, that whole thing where they were toying with us on is there going to be Star Trek Legacy or not? And then now we're hearing, oh, they were always going to do Star Trek Legacy. They just wanted to see how much people wanted it. But are they were always going to do it.
Have they said they're doing it? I haven't heard.
Oh,
that
they're
for
doing
sure.
It. Oh, they're.
And it's what's going on? Somebody's buying out Paramount, though, right? Sundance.
Well,
Skydance.
Okay, so
what is it? It's Skydance, right?
I think it's Skydance.
Yeah.
Skydance was definitely all lined up to buy at least the TV business, or was it the TV business? Well, whatever. So they would have been quite influential over what the heck happens with Star Trek next. And then the Paramount, the leader of Paramount, walked away from the table and ended that deal. But I don't know whether it started back up again, but I think I might have heard something about maybe negotiations started back up again. I don't know. Any way, shape, or form, Star Trek's going to continue. They can make too much money with the property if they do it right, and they know that. So whoever owns them is going to continue with something. And, okay, so remember the Shuttle Pod podcast?
Yeah.
So Trip Tucker and Malcolm.
Right.
Those actors. Every podcast they would have different folks, mostly from Star Trek world, but sometimes other people too, mostly Star Trek world though. And they're apparently doing yet another podcast, those two guys, with a different name. So I guess they got a spinoff podcast. Anyway, they actually had the guy that plays Picard's son on it, and then also was Terry Metalis. The creator of the showrunner during Picard's.
Right.
So they had both of them on there And this is a recent thing. So I didn't watch all of it, but yeah, it's happening.
Good.
It's happening. And then as far as there going to be a season three of Prodigy? I don't know, but this season two was pretty good. So I think they definitely, at least in my opinion, earned a third season. Whether they'll get it or not, who knows?
Yeah. Well, I have a feeling
they'll get it, but I don't know.
Yeah.
And when you have outlets like Netflix and Amazon, I mean, it's not as hot and heavy in the streaming wars as it was a year or two ago, but they still have to have content. I mean, nothing's changed there. So, and this is pretty good content, so you'd think so. And then the idea of Paramount, you know, letting some of their stuff go to other people, kind of like Marvel did with the TV shows there for a while with Netflix.
Right.
I guess that kind of makes sense, right? I mean, especially if you're going to get bought out and maybe de-emphasize your streaming.
Yeah, I think that's something all of them are needing to start doing.
Exactly. You just can't have five different streaming services and then just expect that people are going to pay for three or four of them.
Right.
It's just ridiculous. So the weakest ones, like Peacock, like Paramount, they'll probably sell more of their content in the long run to some of the big boys. I think. So we'll see. Anyway, should we start with our books?
Yeah, let's do the books now.
Excellent. Okay, so I am doing issue 22 of Star Trek 2022. So Donovan says, because those numbers line up, there's some kind of numerical importance to this. So this is important. Anywho, this is titled Pleroma, Part 4. Published date July 2024. Creative team includes writer Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, artist Megan Levins, colorist Lee Lowridge, letterer Clayton Cowles, design and production Neil Yataki, group editor Heather Antos, editorial assistant Cassandra Jones. Okay, so we got three covers. The first cover features an old gray-bearded Wesley. You kind of see him from the back, and then his head's turned to the left, so you kind of see the profile of his face. And so old Wesley's in the foreground, and then in the background, or medium ground, I don't know, are three versions of Wesley at different ages. And those head and shoulder shots are all kind of within some kind of a weird bubbly gray circular curved kind of border thing. I'm not sure if that's supposed to represent time flows or something or whatever, but there you go. And then in the far back, it kind of looks like a star pattern, or, star field pattern, but then there's also a bunch of squigglies and stuff, so whatever. And that one's art by Megan Levins and colors by Lee Lowridge. Cover B features a very close-up of Captain Sisko's left eye that is reflecting an image of his wormhole alien mother with her hand outstretched. Art by Rod Rice. Retailer incentive cover presents another stained glass motif with Dr. Crusher in the center. To the upper left is an old gray-haired shaven guy, who at first I thought was Wesley, but then I'm thinking it's one of the advanced beings. I forgot the godlike beings. Now, why that particular guy would be on this cover, I don't know. And I forgot his name, but I think he's the guy from Voyager, the alien from Voyager. But okay, in the upper right-hand corner is the Enterprise E. In the lower left is the Guardian of Forever with two human silhouettes within it. The lower right shows Jack Crusher and his young son, Wesley, as he looked back in the early TNG episodes. I think he's got a sweater on. Art by J.J. Lendl.
And who did you think that was?
The guy in the upper left?
Yeah.
I thought that was the guy who was in Caretaker. Caretaker?
Was that the Caretaker?
Yeah, from Voyager, the first episode of Voyager. I mean,
he is there, so it could be.
Well, I know, but why throw, I mean, of all the godlike beings, why throw him in there? But sure. Well, I guess they got the Gardener Forever in the lower left.
Right. I didn't know who that was, and I didn't really think much about it. But yeah, it does kind of look like him.
Yeah.
I thought it was a Metron or something like that.
Well, at first I thought it was like a version of Wesley, but it's like, he does not look like Wesley.
No.
Because wouldn't that make more sense to have old Wesley on there?
Yeah,
but old Wesley has the beard and everything. So anyway, whatever. So J.J. Lendl did the stained glass thing. We'd have to ask him for sure to know for sure. Okay. At the same time, in different crew quarters on the Theseus, Engine Sato is agonizing over whether she should carry out her Section 31 mission using that strange device. And Lieutenant Paris is spending quality time with his daughter, Meryl. Somehow, the father's conversation with his daughter is strangely related to Sato's silent inner turmoil. Will Sato betray Captain Sisko again? In the Pleroma gathering area, Apollo and the others react to the unexpected arrival of Sisko's prophet mother. None of the gods of Pleroma are happy with her presence for various reasons. It is also made obvious that these various godlike beings are at different power levels. The prophet appears to be quite high in power level, while Apollo, not so much. Mother Prophet cuts to the chase and takes Sisko by the hand to explain to her son why she is there and to show him the last days of this universe. In the end, she blames Sisko for the coming Armageddon by him allowing Data to wander into the hands of the Apocalypse. I guess she's talking about Warlord, and not retrieving the Orb of Destruction. Talk about a guilt trip. What is coming next is the consequence of Sisko's failures. Thanks, Mom. Scotty Talir and the other godlike beings hear the conversation. The gods all have their opinions of the situation, but in the end, it seems they are all willing to let the universe end. Talir says stopping the Armageddon is exactly what she is there for, and Scotty chastises the gods for their complete lack of a spine. Hey. Meanwhile, in the Aegis installation, Beverly Crusher looks around in her son's quarters. All the interesting things he has collected in his adventures. A door opens, and through it walks an old gray-haired Wesley Crusher, far older in appearance than his mother. They embrace. Cutting back to Sisko and his prophet mother's ambiguous discussion about circular events and unchangeable destiny, her main point is that Captain Sisko, her son, is not a mere mortal man. He is the Sisko. And when all else is gone, the Sisko must remain. Back at the Aegis installation, Mom Beverly and son Wesley are seated at a table holding hands and catching up. Wesley estimates his age to be around 2,000 years, but it's hard to tell exactly with the timey-wimey thing. Mom asks son to tell her about the most incredible thing he has ever seen in his travels. Son Wesley says, life, did you know it is infinite in both directions? It's nothing like we thought. Mom asks son about his first love, and Wesley says, he's been busy with work. Finally, mom asks if son misses her. Son responds, every single moment. Aw. Wesley pulls his hand back and gets down to business. He gives his mother an envelope saying the road ahead gets very hard for you and says the contents of this envelope will help. Wesley takes out his his pen and sends his mother back to Pleroma saying he hopes to see her at the wedding. Meanwhile at Pleroma, Sato takes the shuttle and flies to a very specific location in Pleroma. Talir slash Tandela appears and tries to talk her out of what she is about to do. As the angry, petulant child she is, she rebels against the godlike being and removes the device from her duffel bag and slaps it down on the floor. Somehow the device triggers an orb. And before you can say engage, a transwarp conduit is established, and a Klingon bird of prey smashes through what appears to be a fragile egg-like shell outer wall of Pleroma. Sisko reacts to the sight, assuming that it's Kalis, but Mom corrects him, saying it's something much worse. It's Lore at the con, with his trusty brother's head at his side. With an evil smile on his face, Lore says he is pissed over not being invited to the god party. He points out that is a tragic oversight on the other gods' part, and they will make sure this never happens again. To be continued.
That's the way to end it right there.
Yeah, you ain't kidding. I find it humorous. Data's head's just sitting there plugged into a wire.
Right. So does this mean that Lore is controlling Section 31 too?
That's
because he only found it because she planted that thing.
Well, you know, that's an excellent question, because what she was going to do, I had no idea it had anything to do with Lore. So right. That's awesome. Yes, good point. So is someone in Section 31 in league with Kalis and now, or was in league with Kalis and now in league with Data, because they don't want godlike beings to be messing around with the Federation and stuff?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I was really confused. Or yeah. Are they going to say it's just some sort of weird coincidence that he was already on his way from the end of the annual, and that this just happens to be when he shows up?
Well, I mean, supposedly it was her slapping that down that created the Borg transwarp conduit or whatever? Is it? Yeah, aren't transwarp conduits Borg technology?
Yeah. Well, sometimes, yeah.
Exactly. I think I've heard it mentioned multiple times. But I think the first time I heard about something like that was the Borg.
And well, the first and time you heard it was Star Trek 3, but because the Excelsior had a transwarp drive.
Oh, okay, but they never talk about conduits.
No. The conduit part, yeah, that was.
Yeah,
what was it? The one with Lore and the Borg, yeah.
That two-parter. Yeah, that was Descent.
Descent, yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah. Right, yep. So anyway, the main thing is Lore has access to Borg tech because he's gone ahead and used the nanites or whatever to convert some of the Klingons, some of the right. Red Path Klingons. So he's got that. So he's probably got transwarp conduit tech,
yeah.
And he's using it. But right. How did good point. It was a Section 31 all along, or somehow was Data able to insert himself
Lore,
in that interaction? Lore somehow insert himself into that interaction Sada was having with Section 31. The latter is unlikely. I like the idea that somebody within Section 31 is in league with Data.
Lore.
Damn it. Anyway, but the thing is, what Lore's talking about doing, or like what he seems to be talking about doing from prior issues, is basically wiping everything out and then starting from scratch, and him and Data are going to be, you know, God.
Right.
So how could you be in league with that if you're Section 31 guy? I mean, that's worse. At least the godlike beings, for the most part, leave people alone. Every once in a while, they'll insert themselves. But for the most part, they kind of leave you alone. I mean, what Lore is planning on doing is not good.
It'll be bad.
It'll be bad.
So, anyways, I was really surprised that, I mean, I'd seen the cover for the next one, but even knowing the cover of the next one before I read this, that last two pages did surprise me. I was like, oh, it's lore.
I wasn't expecting that. It's war. Yeah, I wasn't quite expecting that either. I mean, we were kind of talking in the last episode about are they going to bring them together in this? Pleroma is involved somehow, or is it totally the post Pleroma story will involve lore?
Right.
Nope.
Hmm. No, that's cool.
Yeah.
So just real quick, because I think it's just me being stupid. When Sato slaps that thing down and starts the beacon, or starts the orb to produce a beacon, the woman at the con tells Paris that the sensors are seeing it, but she says LT. What does LT stand for? She says, LT. Is that what it is?
I think. I'm trying to get back to the page to see exactly what the bubbles had in them.
It says, LT. ELTEE. So I kept thinking, is that his initials? But his initials are TP. So,
Right. Okay, I see what you're looking at.
So I guess maybe she is saying lieutenant, but instead of saying lieutenant, she's just abbreviating it LT. Weird.
Well, okay, so I forgot her name, but
Native American woman, yeah.
Helmsman or whatever, Helmswoman. Yeah, ELTEE. We've got something on centers. I mean, it's spelling it out. It wasn't just L, the letters L and the letter T. It's ELTEE, as you probably said.
Yeah, that's we've read that four times now, kid.
Yeah, I know. I don't know.
Yeah,
You said LT, I thought you meant letter L.
I got it.
And that's lieutenant, but no. ELTEE. Hmm.
So maybe LT is just her being, her saying lieutenant, but in her own little
funny way. Lieutenant? We've got something on sensors. And by the way, why is he still a lieutenant? Wouldn't you think he would have been promoted by now when they got back?
I don't know. They've only been back less than a year, and he's already off on some other mission, so who knows?
Right. Just wondering.
I mean, they haven't been back for a year, because all of these books have to take place within about a year. So.
Right.
They must have jumped onto these two ships, Defiant and Theseus, almost immediately after getting back. Yeah.
Okay.
So, anyways, no, I was just curious because I reread that several times, going, "What is she saying? That's not his initials."
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know why they would spell it that way, but if it was Lieutenant, that would make sense.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Well, why spell
it? I'm going with that.
Yeah.
She probably calls the captain CP. What is abbreviation for captain?
I think it's maybe CPT.
There you go. That's maybe. Probably what she calls Cisco.
But it's spelled out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. like R2-D2 or something like that.
Right. Exactly.
So Wesley, shall we talk about that?
Yeah, let's do that.
I really like the Wesley stuff. And
I do too.
Because I've seen him so much on like the little talk show he does, Ready Room, and then I'm in the middle of Prodigy, like I said, I could totally hear his voice. Anytime he said something, I heard I heard his voice.
Right. Oh, his voice from Ready Room?
Yeah,
oh, no, when you're reading this.
When I'm reading this, I can totally hear Will Wheaton's voice.
Right.
His current voice, his old voice.
Right.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it was good. And I don't recall ever seeing Wesley this old. And we've seen him at different time periods and different things in different books. But I don't remember ever seeing him this old before. That's kind of interesting.
In the Coda novels, he got really, really old, but it wasn't visual. We didn't get to see him.
It wasn't visual.
We just read about it. But yeah, so no, he's super old. And then I love the very end when he disappears, or when she disappears.
Right.
He says,
yeah,
hope to see you at the wedding. Ah, I loved it.
Yeah.
Loved it.
That was a good callback or call forward.
Yeah. So basically saying if reality doesn't get destroyed, he knows that he'll see her at the wedding because it's
exactly
her future.
Right. Because
yeah.
Right. Because, you know, for him, this already happened.
Right.
So again, timey-wimey stuff. So now, yeah. It's her future, but it's his past.
Right.
Timey-wimey.
Yeah.
You know, another thing
go ahead.
No, you finish.
No, I was just going to say back to the timey-wimey part. I mean, that was why he said he couldn't go to Pleroma, is because he says, I remember those events happening, so I can't be there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was great.
Yeah.
Anyways, what were you saying?
I was going to say another one of Mom's questions was, tell me about your first love. And it's like, basically, I've been too busy. I don't love anybody. And it's like, first love, that was Robin Leffler, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, Ashley Judd was cute as a button back then. So I can definitely see Wesley, falling head over her heels for her.
That's her first question. Seems weird. You have all these godlike
was it first
powers.
Question?
I mean, it was one of her first questions.
It was one of her. Yeah.
You have all these godlike powers. Tell me about your first crush.
Okay. But actually, I think even before Robin came on to TNG, wasn't there another one where some princess or royalty or somebody important came onto the ship?
Yeah, I'm sure there
were
several puppy love episodes.
Okay, puppy love. There you go. Okay. She didn't, correct. Mom Crusher did not say, tell me about your first puppy love.
Anyways. So did you see all the little trinkets he had floating around his office?
Oh,
his
office? His quarters office? Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You want to talk about those?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the only one I really wanted to bring up was the Klingon mask from...
Exactly.
From the Kelvin universe.
Exactly. That was everything else kind of made sense. Well, I'm not sure about the sword.
But yeah.
Everything else kind of made sense, but definitely their choice of putting a Star Trek 2009 style Klingon helmet in there was definitely unexpected.
Right. That and the credit card. What do you think that credit card was supposed to be?
I don't know. An ID card? Was it something that he was using? I mean, was it like a real magic credit card that he used when he was on Earth in the past or something? I mean, like Gary Seven? Because they're full on saying they're combining the Gary Seven, Aegis, Earth agents, right?
Yeah. No, that's all been combined now with season two of Picard.
Right. So it's so they're completely combining all that kind of stuff. So that's the only thing that kind of made sense to me.
Mm.
But why would you keep a credit card around? Or is it some kind of ID card? And then
and it
in
says
the future, why would you use
or something
like
on there or something like that? So
you see words on that?
Yeah, if you zoom in on the Comixology thing, it says AJ and then maybe OULT. And then it has three pips on it. So that's why I was like, maybe it's not a credit card, but I don't know why it would have pips.
It's his Aegis ID?
Maybe.
And would the Aegis even have ID like that anymore?
I don't know. They have everything else is very retro there.
Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway.
And by the way, everything seems to be moving upwards in that, you know, when she first comes into the room and the lights
floating,
come on.
Right. It has those little lines underneath it.
But it's not only floating, they seem to be insinuating that it is lifting. in the air, doesn't it? Isn't it?
I don't know. I wasn't quite sure if it was just like bobbing or what. Because when the door opens, it kind of has that same whoosh looking line. So I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. And speaking of the doors, it does go PSHH. Yep. So it's a little bit like a Starship doors, but they open from the top or from the sides, and almost like a sideways going saloon door or something.
Right.
It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, no, it's different.
Because it's like two circles that don't really fully cover the door. You know, you don't have a lot of privacy with those doors. And then they slide off to the sides. I thought that was kind of different. But is that closed the first time you see it, kind of like in the dark in the upper left-hand corner panel? Is that really closed mode?
No, I think it's opening. I think it's already opening.
Okay.
But yeah, you're right. But it doesn't say, and it doesn't say fush until it's already open. So yeah, you're right.
And there are no little lines drawn trying to insinuate movement.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, the lines underneath all the objects got me too.
Yeah. Cool. So there's a tricorder, there's a TNG comm badge, and then there's a model of the Enterprise.
Enterprise D. Yeah.
Yeah. So that kind of, all that makes sense.
Yes.
Sword, I don't know. What is that? A piece of white paper?
Yeah, a piece of white paper.
It looks like a piece of, laser jet paper.
Right.
You know, you get at work.
Can't zoom in and read anything. So who knows what's on it?
Yeah.
So yeah, really, the credit card and the sword were the only ones that I was just like, I don't know what those are. It must be a reference to something. But the Klingon helmet, I was just like, oh, he's been to the Kelvin universe.
Exactly, which is cool. You don't think of that as much,
right?
Jumping between, I mean, time is one thing, but jumping between parallel dimensions. But hey, they're Aegis. They can do anything.
Right, right.
Okay. I don't appreciate being referred to as ants. However, there is a the full page of like written text that's on page 20. So I think Aelborn was writing this thing.
Right.
And so there's one particular part of it where he writes, the ants have poisoned the water and all those who drink from the river of time are dying. So I'm not too crazy being referred to as ants, but the whole idea that like the mere mortals of Kalis and I guess lore can do anything that would affect the gods. I mean, right. short of that weapon they were using early in the
the Orb of Destruction,
in the Day of Blood stuff. There you go.
Right.
But the idea that the ants could do anything to them is kind of weird, and I don't appreciate being called ants.
Well, I'm sure that's why they wrote it, to offend you
personally. Okay, so Tendella. She is the lone survivor of the Organian race, apparently, right?
Right.
So I wonder, so were they one of Kalis's early casualties, the Organian race?
Yeah, I don't know, because they've kind of been wiped out of history. You know, they said that it's like going backwards through time, destroying
and erasing you.
Yeah.
Right.
So I wasn't quite sure when she was talking about it in that earlier issue.
Right.
You just got to kind of go with it.
Right.
They're gone. He's the last one. She's the last one.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I thought that was interesting. I think the only other thing I had to say. Okay. So the whole gibberish that Mom Sisko was giving him.
Yeah.
About saying it's all your, yeah, exactly. There's a lot of chit chat, and there's even a costume change. So it's very impressive. and just talking about all this stuff about, you know, the Cisco must survive, the Cisco, when everything else is gone, the Cisco will survive and stuff. It's like, what are you talking about? I mean, is she saying that the wormhole aliens are going away too? And the only thing left is going to be Cisco? Or are they saying that all the really super advanced races are going to go bye-bye here? And then the normal mortals are going to be left.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. And she keeps saying that he's already made his decision in the future, so really he's only doing things now to get to that future that he's already decided. And then the Cisco's like, I haven't made a decision yet. And she's like, oh, yeah, you have. You just don't know it yet. You know, or it's in your future, but you know what you've already made your decision and now you're doing it, you know, or something like that. Yeah. So,
well, the idea that the prophets don't see time, they see everything simultaneously, makes it very difficult to talk to them.
Right. But this is the most chatty a prophet's ever been, because usually they just say one or two words and then they turn into somebody else and say a few words. So,
and then they leave.
Yeah. So this is by far the most chatty he's ever had with his mom.
There you go.
And they're literally like walking through the cosmos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Reading some of this stuff and the whole concept that, well, are they trying to say that maybe there's a future where all the godlike beings do go away and then humanity and the Federation and Vulcans and Klingons, all the lesser races are on their own to stand or fall, do whatever, but the advanced godlike beings are going to be gone. I mean, is that what they're... So when they were talking about that kind of stuff, it was reminding me of Babylon 5. Which
I haven't seen.
That was one of the main points of that whole thing was two advanced species were messing around with the more primitive races. Mm. For their own reasons. You may actually watch Babylon 5 someday, so I don't want to tell you everything. But the main point is by the end, you know, near the end of the series, Sheridan, you know, the main character is just saying, you know, get the hell out of our galaxy. We can handle this on our own. And so that was like, oh, is it going to be like that? You know, all the godlike beings go away and, you know, we're on our own to be the captains of our own destiny.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't get any of that out of this. So I don't know where they're going to go with it. All I know is that it seems like all the other gods were kind of scared of her.
Well, yeah, different power levels. You know, apparently the prophets are really powerful.
And then I like how she says something about you couldn't move the stars to stop me or something like that. And then Trelane's like, I could have done it. And then what is it? The Metron or whatever says, just be quiet.
Yeah,
you don't know what you're talking about.
Was that the Metron or was it Charlie X? One of the other guys.
I don't know. It looks like he's wearing one of those robes. So that's why I thought it. I didn't think it was Charlie, but it
Metron. Okay, it probably was Metron. Metron seems pretty up there in power levels, but
right.
Okay,
but I never thought of the prophets being more powerful than any of these other deities.
Well. I had the definite impression they were, and basically Apollo doesn't rate that high.
Guess not.
You're a god, but not really much of a god. Sorry, pal. Go flex your pecs over there.
All right, so you done with this one?
I'm just looking forward big time to seeing, you know, how Lore does all of his stuff, because they've definitely teed this up to be Lore is an incredibly big bad in this. Right. So
yeah, I just love that both of these books are so good that, you know, I can't wait until the next month to read the next issue. Like, as soon as you finish reading it, you're like, I got to know what happens. Which, you know, I guess because we read so much Star Trek, I kind of got burned out of, you know, of that having to wait, you know, because we always had so much to read. But now that these are the only books that are coming out right now, it's just like, got to find out what happens.
Yes. Now, mind you, this? I feel the same way, but there were points in the 2022 issues where they were built, they were still building things up, and I don't.
Yeah,
it's some issues that were a little more slow.
Yeah, no, totally. The beginning, I was not a fan of the whole Theseus thing, but now, now this series and even the last series got me hooked.
Good, me too.
All right, so shall we go on to Defiant, the other ongoing?
Let's.
So this is issue number 17. It is titled The Stars of Home, Part 1. The writer is Christopher Cantwell, artist by Angel Unzeta, colorist by Marissa Louise, letterer Clayton Cowles, design and production Neil Yutaki, group editor Heather Antos, editorial assist by Cassandra Jones. All right, so in the back of the book, there's three covers. Cover A is by Angel Unzeta, which shows Spock screaming in pain as beams of light are, I guess, going through him, because you see one going through his cheek, maybe into his mouth. It is kind of weird because the picture kind of looks more like Zachary Quinto than Leonard Nimoy, or at least that's my opinion. Cover B is by Jake Bartok, and it shows Miles O'Brien at a podium, and then behind him you see hundreds of little mines kind of floating around and going far, far, far into the distance. And then the retail incentive cover is by Declan Shalvey, and it shows three Romulans at the foreground. Behind them you see a shattered Federation Starfleet logo, and then you see the Defiant on one side and a Romulan Bird of Prey on the other. So the story starts with a mysterious dark-skinned male Romulan and two female Romulans breaking into the headquarters of the Tal Shiar. There, these commandos stun everybody that are at a debriefing with Chairman Koval. They leave everyone knocked out on the floor, except they do bag Koval and kidnap him. Later, in the Romulan Hall of State, a similar situation happens where these three are able to sneak in and kidnap Praetor Narell himself. So globally on Romulus, the whole planet is put into lockdown, declaring that there's now curfews on all the citizens to get them off the street during this crisis. The three commandos and their captured prey are able to get off planet with ease due to having all the proper identifications. Meanwhile on Earth, Miles O'Brien is giving a lecture when one of his students berates him, claiming that he invented the self-replicating minds and therefore Miles himself should be charged with war crimes, stating that the Romulans and Cardassians are now using this technology to blockade planets. Miles gets mad and he lets slip the C word when referring to the Cardassians. The class is stunned by this, and then Miles leaves the class saying that school is dismissed. Elsewhere, on General Revo's ship, he's informed of Koval's and Narell's kidnappings by his daughter, Sela. They say that their plan is going exactly as expected. Soon, he will be Praetor, and she will be head of the Tal Shiar. They do say that Spock is imprisoned on Raptor 3, and they also hint that the other Defiant crew are serving their purposes well. Back on Earth, Miles is getting reprimanded by the Starfleet principal, I don't know, head of Starfleet Academy, for his disparaging comments. He then goes home to talk to Keiko about it, and then later still, he gets a coded communication with the Defiant's location, and then another communication from Bashir that shows a broadcast that's happening at that moment on Romulus. And the broadcast shows Revo taking over as Praetor until the real Praetor can be returned. The broadcast also calls out that the kidnappers are heading towards Antara, which is in the Delta Quadrant. Meanwhile, on the Romulan commando ship, they are watching the broadcast in horror, saying, this is not part of the plan, because they are indeed heading to Antara. And now they're going to have the whole Romulan Empire on their heels. The broadcast continues now with Sela, now acting as the head of Tal Shiar. And she reports the faces of the three commandos that are responsible for the kidnappings. After the broadcast, O'Brien matches the faces with the computer powers that he has and discovers that these three Romulan commandos are none other than Worf, Ro, and B'Elanna. What has his friend gotten into?
Wow. So that's pretty amazing that that O'Brien was able to do all that.
Computer powers, that, friend.
Well, okay, but he wouldn't have been doing those computer matches, trying to run those computer matches, if he didn't notice something was up with them.
Right.
I think.
It's weird.
And that's great, because I had no idea that was Worf and B'Elanna and Ro. Until, you know, what right. Was it B'Elanna? Was that B'Elanna? Because
Yeah,
the women
says
do not
Worf.
Look like. Exactly.
Yeah.
So when they're on the bridge of that Vulcan or the Romulan ship, and right. Finally she says, Worf, what do we do? It was like, what? Oh, it was them the whole time. That makes so much sense.
It's so funny because when I was reading it the first time, that first page of them, I was like, oh, that looks like Worf. And I'm like, oh, he doesn't have the ridges. So that's weird that they're making this Romulan look a little bit like a Klingon. And then I didn't think of it again. It was just out of my head. That was never Worf again until you, like you said, she calls him Worf. And then I'm like, oh, it is Worf. And then when I was doing the synopsis, I went back and reread it. And then, you know, that's when I caught that the Revo says that the other Defiant crew are also, you know, doing our bidding or whatever. So I guess it does kind of give it away earlier on that's probably them. Well, but
it gives me another clue that I should have picked up on.
Right.
It was and the artwork is great. Angel Unzueta. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right. Unzueta, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. Angel is doing an awesome job in this book, in the artwork.
Yeah. No, these books look great. And I did forget to mention that it does have a couple of pages of Spock being tortured there on the prison planet.
Right.
And man, those shots of him look just like Leonard Nimoy. I mean,
yeah.
Old Leonard Nimoy, you know, like what he should be at this time.
Right.
But
and his clothes are tattered.
Yeah.
And so they're using colors, light to inflict the pain, apparently.
Is that what it is? I mean, they are all different colored panels, so.
Yeah. So you think it looks like this some kind of sonic torture. But the colors are different in every panel, and there's a voice that says psychophotonic treatments.
Psychophotonic, yeah.
Yeah, so it's light based, but why can't you just shut your eyes? That's what it is. Anyway, whatever. They're trying to do something different.
So on the cover, when obviously the cover is depicting this scene, do you think that it looks like Zachary Quinto?
Oh, I completely agree with you.
Or is it just that Zachary Quinto kind of looks like Leonard Nimoy, so they both look like Spock?
I think for whatever reason, Angel was channeling Zachary when he did that one.
Maybe
because look at him. He doesn't look old.
No, he doesn't.
I mean, his forehead's kind of crinkled, but that's because he's under such pain. But the rest of his face doesn't really look old. Where right. In the issue, definitely.
Right, right. In the issue, it definitely looks like Leonard Nimoy. But here, it does, to me, it looks just like Zachary Quinto.
Yeah.
When he's yelling out Khan.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I agree with you. And I got to say, the only thing that might not, in all cases, work for me as much is how he drew O'Brien. I think he drew O'Brien very well. But, yeah, if anything was a little off, maybe slightly O'Brien in some panels, but I think he did a good job there, too.
Yeah. Well, like we've said, anytime O'Brien shows up, for whatever reason, he seems to be a hard guy to draw because almost every comic book that he's ever in, he never looks right.
Yeah. He looks good in this one.
Yeah. Yeah. So what did you think about that little outburst when he calls them the C word, which we won't mention here. This is a family
show. Cardi's?
Ken. You can't say that word.
Damned Cardies.
Seemed a little out of nowhere. I mean, I get that he's upset that she's calling him a war criminal, but then he let slip that, and then I thought he'd kind of gotten over all of that. Well, and even when he's talking to the commissioner or whatever, he's like, you know, I've worked with lots of nice Cardassians. I don't know why I said it. Other than that, you wanted that shock value.
I wasn't that shocked, quite frankly. But yes, I know it's supposed to be very derogatory within universe, but
right.
And quite frankly, that little know-it-all minx, it's like, boy, I did not like her one bit.
That wouldn't it be funny if she ends up being like a main character later in the series? Like
and then he's gotta deal with her.
Right, yeah, she joins his team.
She's one of those self-righteous little people, youngins that don't have any clue.
Right. You know, time-wise, it would be kind of interesting if they would have placed, you know, like a Boimler or somebody like that in that class.
Oh.
Because that would have been about the time when they were in Starfleet Academy because they're not ensigns yet.
Right.
So this could have been a young Mariner.
Mariner's popping up all over the place, sure.
Yeah.
She is popping up all over the place.
So I'm just saying that this would have been a good excuse to bring in one of those characters as a cadet, I think. But they didn't, so oh well.
No, they didn't. They can't pop those people up everywhere.
Why not?
Maybe Tindy. Tindy pops up all green and everything.
Right. That would have been awesome.
Yeah. I could have done that. Yeah. I do not like this little girl at all.
No, this little girl's a brat.
And she's got what is that? Is that, yeah, the two, you know.
Two little buns on each side of her head?
Well, they're not.
Yeah, high up. Yeah, I don't know what they're called.
They're more like really big Dunkin' Donut holes. Like on this, you know, on the corners of her head,
right,
on the left, right. Yeah, they're not Princess Leia, I'll tell you that. But they look kind of weird. That's fine.
Yeah, but it was interesting that you know, that her talking about him creating those and then that technology still being used by other people.
Mm-hmm.
It got me thinking about the transporter. I mean, she talks about Oppenheimer. But what about the guy who invented the transporter? Mm-hmm. How many people has that killed? And you could use it for so much evil, like we've talked about. Just beam up a whole city into space, and then you're like, yep, I'm done.
Just never reintegrate it.
Right. Oh, yeah. You don't even have to reintegrate it. Just delete the pattern buffer, and then...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think out of all the technology that they've invented, that has to be one of the worst ones.
Most dangerous, most right. Potentially dangerous. Yes, I agree.
And the one they take
and again,
for granted. Right. Just like, hey, just jump on it again.
Yeah, and maybe because Oppenheimer, the movie, came out not that long ago, why the writers maybe thought about this angle.
Right.
Or maybe it's just coincidence. But I did not see the Oppenheimer movie, by the way.
Oh, really?
So there's a lot of details about Oppenheimer's story that I do not know. But in the end, Oppenheimer was trying to do what the government wanted him to do and stop the Germans and or the Axis powers.
Right.
And so they were trying to stop a war. So the as much as you want to be, Monday morning quarterback, looking back on things and, oh, my God, look at all the things that started. Hey, at least we're all not talking German, Missy.
Or Cardassian or Dominion, right?
Well, in this case,
that's what she's exactly. Talking about. That's talking why he Dominion. Did. Yeah,
exactly. He was trying to keep the whole Federation from being overrun and taken over.
Yeah, and her talking about the what he did actually being a war crime, not even just inventing it, but also laying the mines in front of that wormhole. That didn't do anything. Technically, that wormhole shouldn't have existed anyway. So the fact that he mined it or closed it or whatever, that couldn't be considered a war crime. Because it's not like
it wasn't innocence coming through there either. It was warships.
Right, right.
Invading forces. So.
Yeah. So she didn't really have a lot of legs to stand on other than just poke him. And make him feel bad. I mean, I could see it. I mean, because he kind of acted like he didn't know that the Cardassians were repurposing his tech to blockade some previously Dominion-held space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I don't know. I was just happy to see that O'Brien's going to somehow get brought into the larger mix now, since he knows now where the Defiant is, and I'm assuming he's going to go get it in the next issue. Maybe with her. And,
maybe.
I
still don't know exactly why. I still don't know 100% why O'Brien's in here, especially since he was in the annual. And my biggest question is, where's his sweater vest?
Got rid of it after the annual. He's like, I'm going to need to start wearing this uniform.
Yeah, so in the annual, he's got civilian clothes on and 20th century civilian clothes.
Right.
And then the cadets actually seem to have respect for him. That's a difference too. And then in this thing, he's in the uniform and he's got donut hole lady head to contend with. So it's a bit different.
Cadet brat. That's what we're going to call her.
Cadet brat. He's such a brat. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So I just find it interesting that they're putting him into both stories, right? But the looks are different.
Yeah. Well, it's a different artist.
Yeah. Well, of course, yes. But there's no consistency.
Right.
You talk about continuity. Not really.
Yeah, well, he just wore the sweater vest that day to school, and then today he's not. It's not that big. It was casual Friday in the Defiant book.
And so, obviously, we're going to continue to see O'Brien in this. So, is there going to be any talk, any recognition of the events that took place just a week ago, less than a week ago?
Right.
Because because this had to happen after the annual, right?
You would assume so, yeah.
Right. So we're a question mark about where Geordi and O'Brien went after Lore and Data went off into the
like home. we talked about last week. After the events, you kind of thought that we would never see him again. So when I was reading this book and found O'Brien, I was like, he's back.
Well, I thought we were never going to see those two. Like still in that ship, the sailfin or whatever, going after, in some way popping back up, trying to help Data.
Right.
I didn't think we'd see him that way. But now, obviously they went their way, their own ways. They couldn't do anything about helping Data. They went their own ways. And And O'Brien went back to Starfleet and, you know, got rid of the civvies.
Right, right.
Civilian clothes. Okay, there you go. Okay, so what else?
My last comment is I didn't like that Sela is now full-on villain. Because I thought we were kind of getting a redemption for her in the last issue. Or the last couple of issues, right? The last couple of series, you know, after she found out and met her mom. And, you know, you thought, oh, she's seeing the light. And then she confronts her dad and then goes and saves the Defiant crew. And then now it just seems like she's just evil again.
Well, and she may be evil full on, but I also think it's just as possible she isn't evil and she's looking for openings for trying to get people sprung. Because they said in here they've got Spock being tortured, but supposedly Worf and Ro and B'Elanna are allowing them to be changed into Romulans, their appearance anyway, and go off on this mission. And in return, supposedly, they're going to free Spock.
Right.
So maybe she, Sela, engineered that deal. And it's a way, whereas if she stays where she's at, plugged in with her father, that she thinks maybe somehow he'll actually live up to his side of the bargain. And they'll get, and that's the way they at least his crewmates get out of it, even if she can't join them again. But now that they've made it obvious that Daddy Warbucks was going to you know, screw over Worf and company all the way along, now, you know, how much is she reacting to that? I mean, she is trying to find out more about the whole magic supernova that's going to destroy Romulus and everything.
Right.
Which is what's obviously, you know, driving her father. And she's trying to get that info out of him, but he won't tell her. So I don't know. Maybe she's gone villain again, but, you know, she's going to be one of those interesting characters, you know, little duality going there. Sometimes she's good, sometimes she's bad, anti-hero. I don't think she's gone full evil, but it does kind of look like she's on the evil side right now.
Right.
You could be right. So, you could be right.
So we know that Praetor Norrell.
Okay.
He was Praetor during the Next Generation series, right? During Unification 1 and 2.
Oh, I did not. I did not recall that.
But he's not Praetor in Nemesis, right? He's not the one that Shizon kills and then becomes Praetor. So I guess this is going to explain why.
Do not remember names. That
there's
well.
Another Praetor in Nemesis.
Okay. Because so, well, we're coming very close to Nemesis time, right?
Right.
That's on the horizon.
Right. So it means that this guy has to become Praetor and then get killed like almost immediately. because if this takes place right before Shizon's thing, then that means that Harren, or what was his name? Was it Harren? Harlan? I don't know. I don't remember Colin what Ellis? The Praetor's name in Nemesis. I think it was Harren.
I don't know.
So yeah.
You've got an awesome memory, or you went and researched this a little bit. That's pretty good.
Well, I just know that this is not the guy from Nemesis. That's all I know.
Right. Okay. Well, a lot of things are going to have to fall into place. So they're going to have to bring Shizon back into this comic book at some point. Because is Shizon pulling the strings of Daddy Warbucks or what?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited to find out.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Oh, okay. I guess my last comment is the whole idea that Julian Bashir is in the book, which I was not expecting at all. Because definitely before Miles goes and does all of his, you know, researching and figures out that Worf and whatever and crew are these Romulans, he gets a Priority One message. And it says, you should see this. It's in text. And it says, you know, Julian. So Julian Bashir, who
does have a at least in the he does have a history with Section 31, and that whole interaction with Section 31 goes way up in the in some of the novels.
Right.
Yeah. So very interesting. It looks like Julian is in a Section 31 mode or something.
It does feel that way, yeah.
It feels like that. And he's getting O'Brien involved. I mean, this isn't just a, hey, you should check this out. It's like sending a YouTube link to something. No, this is something really important. And he's getting Miles involved in this, his friend. So. Right.
Yeah. Why would he get involved into it? Yeah.
Right. I want to know more about exactly. Unless I want to know more about that.
Was Julian also the one that sent the transponder code for the Defiant? Because that was never really explained either. So he got a message that had transponder code for the Defiant. No, to O'Brien.
Oh, okay.
O'Brien got two messages. One that was just the Defiant's transponder code and location. And then the second one was from Julian that he had to unlock and then watch the video. So I'm just wondering, okay. did O'Brien send both of them?
Yeah, right.
Not O'Brien. Did Bashir send both of them? I don't know.
I don't know. But that is a good point. I mean, you're right. It did say where the Defiant was located in the Delta Triangle. The Delta Triangle? Okay.
I don't know what that
is. So that ship they're flying around in, that's not the Defiant.
No.
At least it doesn't look like the Defiant. It does have cloaks, but of course, it's a Romulan ship.
It's a Romulan ship. Yeah.
So they have the Defiant somewhere. And they can't get near it. So they got to go off on this mission in this similarly sized, similarly capabilityed Romulan ship. I'm not quite sure. Right. But, okay, so the Defiant is located near the Delta Triangle, wherever that is. But that's not where Worf and company are.
Yeah, but they are going to the Delta Quadrant. So it does say that they're going to the Delta Quadrant to this, what is it?
Right, Antares. Antaran?
Right, which is a planet that was destroyed by the Borg in the 19th century. The 19th century.
Is that supposed to be Earth's 19th century? Because
I would assume so. But that means that they were pretty close to
the... But it's Worf that says this.
Right.
Why would Worf use an Earth reference?
Good point. So that us, the readers, will know what he's talking about?
Well, yes, exactly. That I agree with.
I didn't even think about that. That's funny.
Yeah.
So, but I was just like, why? One... How far is the Delta Quadrant from where they're at? I know that the whole galaxy's quadrant out, and maybe the tip of the Delta Quadrant's not too terribly far away. But still, the Borg came that close, and we never heard about them until Picard and company were shot really far into the into deep space.
Yeah, yeah. You would think that the Borg would be a little further into the Delta Quadrant. Away from the border.
Right, right.
Or else we would have heard more about them. I agree with that.
And if this planet is further deeper into the Delta Quadrant, then how are they getting there so fast?
Yeah. And plus, I think they actually said the planet was not far into the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah, that's the... Yeah, okay.
So I think that's what Worf said when they were in the ship.
Right. Just thought it was weird.
Yeah. Anyway... So it's quite exciting. I very much look forward to. I mean, we had that question before about who in Section 31 gave Sato.
Yeah.
Gave Sato the device, and then now we have. Julian.
What if we find out it's Julian? Yeah.
It can't be Julian.
Nah, it won't be Julian.
It can't be Julian. But there's a lot of Section 31 maybe stuff going on here.
Right.
So
again, it's a good book. Keeps you hooked. You're wanting to get to that next issue.
Yep. And they're coordinating again. They're coordinating two series pretty well.
And this is one of the things that I've you know, we've talked about before, you know, when we read the DC ongoing and even the Boldly Go ongoing and things like that, that the benefit of an ongoing is that you can pepper in things and then not resolve them until year later or whatever. Whereas with miniseries is you had like four issues and you had to tell the story from beginning to end and it was done, you know? So, I like that they're taking advantage of the long form with just peppering in little bits that don't pay off until months and months later.
And obviously that requires advanced planning. So almost like what you do with a TV series, planning out the whole season.
Right.
And then that way, if you know where you're going to go at the end, you can figure out where to slot in things that are necessary for the bigger story.
Exactly.
So unlike probably a lot of ongoing comic books, it's long form storytelling, even though there may be a few arcs in the middle
right.
of that season. Yep. Pretty good. Great stuff. That's the last thing I have to say. I do enjoy this, this story. But I have no more comments.
Yep. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yep.
All right. But we are caught up with Star Trek, unfortunately. There's no other little mini-series is going on right now. We just have the two ongoing. Mm-hmm. So we have a couple of weeks where we're not going to have new Trek. So we're going to do a Star Trek comic book review presents.
Yay! And what interesting little spur, little...
So we try to stick with sci-fi television that has migrated into comic books. That's mm-hmm. usually what we shoot for.
Sure.
But we also kind of shoot for crossovers, right? Because we did the mm-hmm. RoboCop, Terminator, Alien Nation, Planet of the Apes. Now mm-hmm. we're going to do. Ready?
I'm ready.
Rick and Morty, and Dungeons and Dragons. Lots of ands in that statement.
Yeah. And so I am a Rick and Morty fan. It's definitely sci-fi. So Rick and Morty makes perfect sense. Dungeons and Dragons, I'm not as involved in my life. I've not been as involved with Dungeons and Dragons, but I did like the Chris Pine movie a few years ago. So this is going to be
interesting. There's a Star Trek reference right there.
Right, exactly right there. So I'm kind of looking forward to this whole Rick and Morty Dungeons and Dragons thing. Because I don't know what they're going to do with the Dungeons part of it. Dungeons and Dragons part of it.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting to read. I've had these books for years and I've never gotten around to reading them. So I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. Okay. Well, I guess until next time. Thanks for joining us, everybody, on the review.
Later.
Thank you for listening to Star Trek Comic Book Review. All Star Trek stories and characters are copyrighted CBS Studios Incorporated. All music, stories, and characters discussed are for entertainment purposes only. You can email us at startcomicbookreview@gmail.com. Visit us at our website, www.stcomicbookreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes or friend us on Facebook at first name ST Comic, second name Book Review. See you next time on Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Let's get the hell out of here.